Live from Sacramento, California.
Woke up quick at about noon.
Featuring Damian Barling.
Yes, I absolutely still love Russell Westbrook. So what?
And Kenny Caraway.
Sometimes you're really just vibing out.
This is D-Lo and KC.
I'm the streets voice out west. Legendary self-made progress. Last time that I checked.
On ESPN 1320.
Woo! You heard the man. He said he still loves Russell Westbrook.
It could be one of the moments of all moments in the history of D-Lo in the city of Sacramento if this goes down. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
He's in the news today. We welcome you in here to D-Lo and KC on ESPN 1320. We are so happy that you're here with us. Damian Barling, along with Kenny Caraway, and we are getting closer and closer to the start of the NBA season. We're getting closer, and when I say the start of the NBA season, I'm talking free agency, I'm talking the draft, I'm talking absolute chaos. We're already in the midst of trade rumors. We got superstars wanting out. We've got all-star players, all-pro players asking other teams while they're on the floor playing each other, saying, hey, can I come play with y'all?
Come on now.
We've got all of that coming up today. We've got Mike Triplett. He covers the New Orleans Saints for ESPN. He'll be with us at the bottom of this hour, actually, and I guess that's where we'll start here. Again, tons of NBA stuff to talk about, and we will do that today. We've got the 49ers and the Saints, as we mentioned, Mike Triplett, at the bottom of this hour. The 49ers, you know, there's all sorts of excitement surrounding the NBA season. There's excitement, and it's the start of the year, and there's hope. There's hope for 30 franchises, and who's going to get better, and what are the Warriors going to do? And is this number one pick going to put the Timberwolves over the top? And is this new regime here in Sacramento going to change everything for the Kings? 15 years of frustration, all wiped out thanks to the almighty Monty McNair. Meanwhile, the San Francisco 49ers season has an entirely different tone to it. As we are just over.
Tragic.
It's the despair that has happened with the San Francisco 49ers season, because very literally, with no exaggeration at all, not a single week has passed here headed into, what are we, week 9? Week 10?
Week 10, I think, officially.
A single week has passed by where the 49ers haven't gotten some semblance of bad news. Didn't matter if they won. Didn't matter if they blew a team out. Some bad news was surely to follow. And that's been the case all year, and it was, you know, the case yesterday, despite the fact the San Francisco 49ers had the weekend off. Of course, they played last Thursday. Kyle Shanahan spoke to the media, and he said, yeah, no Raheem Mostert, no Tevin Coleman. They're very likely not to play this week versus New Orleans Saints. And, yeah, Richard Sherman practice window was open. He was out there doing some one-on-one drills. He's not going to play Sunday, and we really don't know when Richard Sherman is going to play again.
K'Wan Williams, also out of nowhere.
They can't even put that poor guy on IR, because if they do, his season's over.
Right.
They just got to kind of let him sit there. And, oh, by the way, they're playing Kwame Alexander this weekend.
No, yeah. And somehow he's finally healthy.
Right.
He's finally healthy out of nowhere.
Exactly.
No Tart. You know what I mean? Look, I think Matt Barrows mentioned it, and he talked about, I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing, but his headline or his tweet was, somehow the 49ers come out of the mini bye more hurt than they were before the mini bye. I mean, that's the type of season it's been, right? It's like, I know I was real boisterous at the beginning of the season, and I was talking about, you know, ain't no Super Bowl hangover, they'll be fine, best roster in the league and all this other stuff. I could handle it a lot more if I was just flat out wrong. Like, if everything was going on and they didn't win games, the roster wasn't as good as I thought it was. If I was just wrong, that's just what it was. But it's even more frustrating when they haven't even had an opportunity. They haven't had an opportunity from week one.
Nope.
From the last two weeks of training camp.
The season they never got off the ground.
No, not at all. And that's just more, I don't know, more deflating, more frustrating, because I believe everything I said. And if they were healthy or even close to it, I think we'd see a lot different season. But they hadn't been able to get off the ground, man. They haven't.
No, and it's been frustrating. Again, all of the hope that resides with, you know, the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors, the Minnesota Timberwolves, all of these teams who are looking for that just that piece, that change. Even, you know, the Lakers, are they going to add DeMar DeRozan and all of these, you know, different things? It's the exact opposite once you get this far into the NBA, or once you get this far into the NFL season, and it has been the polar opposite for the San Francisco 49ers. And you know, I can't even be mad at Kyle Shanahan. He's just taking this game to game, like, hey, we've got the talent here. We've got to string some things together. And this is why I hate this is the epitome of why I hate the line next man up, because it diminishes Raheem Mostert, right? Tevin Coleman's out too, by the way. He ain't playing, but he's not Raheem Mostert. So you could say next man up if you want to. It ain't the same guy.
No.
That's why I've always hated that phrase, because it diminishes the guy who went down. I remember Donovan McNabb. That was really at the center of T.O.'s beef with him, when he was like, oh, next man up. And T.O.'s like, yo, I'm the reason you're here.
Right.
What I've been doing out there on the field. And you're just next man up, like someone's just going to step in and fill in what I do. We've heard, seen, watched with our own two eyes all year. There's no running back. I think I read a tweet from Kyle Mattson this morning, the Prince of Niners Wire and the host of Candlestick Chronicles. He said that Raheem Mostert has been on the field for like 19% of the 49ers offensive snaps this season. And he's still the team's leading rusher.
Yeah. I mean, that's because nobody else has been able to play like two straight weeks almost. Like, it's amazing that Hastings and McKinnon have, I'm knocking on a bunch of wood right now, haven't gone down at all. They've been the most consistent playing running backs. But everybody from Mostert to Tevin Coleman to Jeff Wilson Jr., you know, have a good showing, have a good performance, they're out immediately. You know, it's just, man, never got off the ground, man. It's super frustrating.
If you had Jerick McKinnon as the team's healthiest running back in Week 10, you deserve a cash prize. And God bless you, and God bless Jerick McKinnon for watching teammate after teammate after teammate after teammate after teammate after teammate go down week after week after week. Yeah. And yet he's been able to stay healthy. Now, he had some games where he didn't play a very high percentage of plays, and that was a part of, you know, Kyle Shanahan's plan, as he's talked about in the past. But he's been able to stay healthy. He's the only running back who's been active the entire season.
Yeah. Yeah. And look, good for him. Been critical of him. Deservedly so. I mean, like I say, he's a shell of himself. But just to be out there for another opportunity, another go-round in his career, be out there for, you know, hopefully the whole season. I'm happy for Jerick McKinnon. You know what I mean? Regardless of the production and all this other stuff, I'm happy for him to get this opportunity and be able to do these type of things out here and hopefully see a whole season through.
Well, it's going to be Hasty and McKinnon in a really, you know, they're going to be the primary running backs against a defense that I can't quite figure out exactly what the defense is. Again, the New Orleans Saints defense, they're good. You know, they've had years where they've been great. They're not that. They looked great on Sunday. I think they're somewhere in the middle. We'll talk to Mike Triplett about that when he joins us at 12:30. But they're just kind of somewhere in the middle of that great, great defense we saw on Sunday night, which is, I feel like, the first time the Saints really got anybody's attention. Like, the Saints are 6-2.
Yeah.
And it's and they're just kind of like, okay.
That was the first time they got into my power rankings all year.
And we know how prestigious the D'Lo and Casey power rankings. They made it into my power rankings as well. And again, you know, what else matters once you crack the D'Lo and Casey power rankings?
Absolutely nothing. That's the creme de la creme,
obviously,
of all cosigns.
Obviously. And I wonder, you know, I keep going back to, is this Drew Brees? Like, because Drew Brees isn't throwing for 5,000 yards, which is so accustomed, you know, that's what we're so used to seeing, is 450-yard games, four touchdowns. We're used to seeing that night after night after night, week after week after week. We're not – it doesn't feel like we're seeing that this year, so it takes some of the shine off of the New Orleans Saints a little bit, when the fact is, as we just noted, they're still winning games. They've already beaten the Bucs twice, I think.
Yeah, rather easily, both times.
Yeah, and so now here they are, 6-2.
I look at the Saints, man, and I'm not floored. They don't have that aura about them that they've had in the past. And there's a number of different things that go into it. I mean, you got the situation that Breeze is older. You know, the team isn't exactly the same. There was an aura and, you know, almost a fear for a lot of teams going into the Dome and the way they were able to play out there, the crowd, all that stuff. It's not there this year. So I think that's why the 6-2 is kind of sneaking up on people. But also, if you look at the 6-2, aside from the Buccaneers, I think this is why it really caught people's attention the other day. Aside from the Buccaneers, it's not that impressive of a 6-2. You can make the argument that the two other good teams that they played, they lost two rather easily. Mm-hmm. So
they lost to the Packers by a score.
I think the Packers were in control that whole game, though.
That's fine. I mean, that's fine. But see, if we're going to do that, who has an impressive record that's like, oh, man, they've beaten
Kansas City
and Baltimore, and they've beaten the big dogs? Like, who has that? Because I don't think anybody does. I feel
That's why the NFC is, like, you know, saying that the Saints are the best team in the NFC isn't really saying much, in my opinion. I think the Steelers have that. The Steelers have a few good wins. The Titans, the Ravens, the Chiefs, they got the same thing. They beat the Ravens. They beat the Bills in Buffalo. They've got we mentioned it yesterday. Steelers and the Chiefs are clearly the two best teams in the league. They've been the most impressive, and they've been the most consistent. Other than that, everybody else is just kind of there.
Pittsburgh 8-0, top of our prestigious power rankings. They beat the Ravens and the Titans.
Mm-hmm.
They did it in back-to-back weeks by a combined 7 points in those two games, a combined 7 points. They beat the Browns. You don't like the Browns. I mean, they've beaten the Giants, the Eagles, the Cowboys. Like, I mean, like, what does that, like, amount to? We can dissect virtually everybody's schedule and say, well, they haven't beaten anybody. Talked about Kansas City. Okay. They beat the Ravens. They beat the Bills.
That's about it.
I'm not pausing for drama. That's the end of it. So you could do it. The point I'm trying to make is you could do this with every team in the league and say, well, they haven't really beaten anybody, or they haven't beaten impressive teams. There's no one that has this, like, murderer's row schedule.
You're 100% right, but here's the thing.
And I'd argue the Saints beat the Bucs twice. So.
Yeah, but here's the thing with the Steelers and the Chiefs compared to the Saints. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen them lose to a good team. Well, you can say the Chiefs lost to the Raiders, right? But that was, you know, a loss that would go on their resume. But you look at the Saints, they've lost to the Raiders and the Packers. Mm-hmm. They've beaten the Bucs twice. I get credit for that. Look, they're number three in the league in our power rank. It's like, I'm not shading them, but it just, and even, so here's the other thing. Even in the wins.
Hold that thought. I want you to dive. I want you to dive further into that, and we'll talk more about the Saints. We'll talk more about the 49ers, and we'll talk to Mike Triplett. We're just getting started here. D'Lo and KC on Sacramento's home of 49ers football, ESPN 1320.
Now back to D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320.
Real quick reminder: another great place to get breaking news, and we'd imagine there's going to be quite a bit of it in the upcoming weeks, is over on our social media accounts at D'Lo and KC on Instagram. You never know when we're going to pop up and do an Instagram live at ESPN 1320 as well on that same platform. And of course, those are the same handles on Twitter. We have hit peak already. This snuck up on us quick, partner. We've hit peak NBA offseason, where Miles Turner is now in a Twitter exchange with Victor Oladipo's sister. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is happening, people. This is happening. The NBA offseason at its finest. Of course, we're 6 days away from our 8-hour NBA draft day extravaganza, 12-8. Next week right here on ESPN 1320. Virtually everyone on the planet is going to join us, whether they know it or not. We're going to call them. We're going to Zoom them. We're going to annoy them until they pick up the phone. We know Jason Jones is going to join us. We're pretty much calling everybody until they answer. And we might call you. So we
might call live on the air, like hear the rings and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, just see what happens.
That's 100% accurate. We may very well be doing that. We're just going to throw out that Zoom link, and anybody who wants to jump on, just click it, and here
what
we
was,
go.
What was the old Kings? Was it post-game or pre-game, like House Party Live or something like that?
House Party, yeah.
Yeah,
it's going to be D-Lo and Jim Cozumore.
Yeah, House Party Live, let's go.
I'm assuming in this situation I would be Kid and you would be Play. I'm just guessing. just guessing. We could we need a Photoshop expert to reenact that movie cover. I think we could.
I'm all for it. I'm all
I think
for
we
it.
Could. I think we could pull that off. We'll text some people who can make that happen. You were saying before the break, Mike Triplett covers the New Orleans Saints for ESPN. He's going to be with us in about 10 minutes. We'll get back into the NBA and some of the rumors surrounding Russell Westbrook, including one that hit the national airwaves involving Buddy Hield and Russell Westbrook. We'll have all of that for you coming up this hour. As a matter of fact, we got lots of basketball conversations on the way this hour. You were saying right before we went to break, you were talking about the New Orleans Saints and you were going to say something about their wins.
Yeah, I mean, we were comparing wins between them, the Steelers, the resumes, all the BCS stuff that we like to do, right? Or that I like to do, right? And look, they have two good wins against the Bucks, and we wondered why people aren't kind of having the same traditional feeling that they have for the Saints. And I think it comes down to the fact that not only have they lost games to the Raiders and the Packers, but the wins they have, Lions, Chargers, Panthers, Bears, all under one score, right? So we would all kind of agree. I mean, they're not the Jets. We're not saying that. But the Lions, Chargers, Panthers, and Bears, they're not good teams. And they're scraping by against these teams. And that's kind of – they either lost or scraped by against bad teams all year pretty much. And then they had this explosion on Sunday, and that's what kind of got them on the scene, got people saying, oh, there's New Orleans. But before that, nobody was paying attention because, quite frankly, they weren't impressive.
This is a fascinating and obnoxious rabbit hole to fall down because I'm looking at the Bills now. Mm-hmm. The Bills, obviously, they have a very quality win just a handful of days ago against the Seattle Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
Their previous two toughest games were against the Chiefs and the Titans in back-to-back weeks, and they lost both of them. And as a matter of fact, the Titans just beat the crap out of them.
Yeah. Yeah, they smacked them around.
Those are your Buffalo Bills.
They were, and I had kind of gotten off the wagon a little bit. But, once again, you said it perfectly. It's a rabbit hole to go down.
Yeah, it's
do
not.
We,
it's,
do we
it's
disregard
not a good idea.
The Dolphins, Rams, yeah. and Raiders wins that yeah. the Bills have before yeah. they got beat down? I don't have the answer. I don't know. I don't even have them. Do I have them? Yeah, they're in my top five. So they made a return. They made a return, but they were out for like 2 weeks.
It's a really dumb thing to do that accomplishes nothing. Like,
I'm curious. It's great. I love it.
But ultimately, you'll spend 30 minutes looking at everybody's schedule, right? Looking at everybody's schedule, trying to analyze who beat who, like what amounts to what, like what's right. Who's got the best strength of schedule and all these different things. And ultimately, you walk away going, okay, well, I just spent 30 minutes doing this, and I've learned nothing.
At the end of the day, in this season, nobody really has no more than two good wins. Like, that's what I'm finding out. Although, you can make the argument that Buffalo probably has. You can make the argument Buffalo has the best resume in the NFL. With wins against the Seahawks, Raiders, Rams, and Dolphins.
Now you want to buy in on the Rams? Because I was just looking at the Seahawks. So the Seahawks, ain't beat nobody.
We know they ain't beat nobody, and they've been getting past people by the skin of their teeth. We know that's the case.
Okay, why don't you? Yeah, you calm down.
Like they are
leading the NFC West. So relax there a little bit.
I told you why they're in the NFC West because we playing with a mass unit.
Well, that's not the Seahawks' fault.
No. No.
They're playing with a bad defense. It kind of evens out. Like 49ers are playing with practice squad players, and the Seahawks are playing with a bad defense at some point.
By choice.
All of it. Well, I don't know that it's by choice. I think no, it's just kind of what
they put that
have.
Together. They put that together and said, this is good enough. That's by choice. I don't know. Like I said, we can – resumes are – but the Buffalo Bills resume is, right. Now that I look at it, they got two losses against top teams.
This is horrible. Then, you know who's got a good resume? Okay, this is the last one, and I'm not looking at another one. Yes, the Raiders beat the Saints and the Chiefs. Come on, man. I can't do this anymore. Just is Damon Radonkowski ready?
Are we going to look at the Niners resume here? Is that next year?
Oh, please. Their resume is that emoji gift with the ace bandage over the head. That's the 49ers season in a nutshell. Mike Triplett said to join us. And I don't know, like, I know we're, you know, if the 49ers can somehow, if they can step out there and they can win this game, and, you know, you can look at it from maybe a Saints fan's perspective who's maybe pessimistic. They could look at it, oh, this would be a total letdown game. We just beat the crap out of the Bucs. That was, you know, we beat them a second time. We humiliated them on Sunday Night Football. We intercepted Brady three times. And now we're going to walk in and we're going to play a group of, and this isn't a knock on the San Francisco 49ers. It's such a stupid phrase, but it is what it is. There are practice squad players on this team, more than the average NFL team. These guys have some practice squad players out there. And, oh, it would be – you come out of that game, and it's a trap game. It's a letdown game. That's what it is, and you go in here and you lose this. I don't see – you know, given the things that we'll talk to Mike Triplett about here in a couple of minutes, with that defensive – dude, Nick Mullins could be in for a really, really long day, especially if that offensive line does him the same way they did him last Thursday night. He could be in for a really, really rough day.
He definitely could be. I mean, one of the big additions is Trent Williams is going to be back, and that's where that's where a good number of that pressure came from on Thursday night. But, I mean, even with Trent Williams back, it's still an injured offensive line. They're still playing with their they've moved. I think Brunskill was a right guard. They've moved him to center. I don't know. They ran out of center options, whether it was due to injury or poor play, and just said, let's put Daniel Brunskill there. Let's see what happens. You know, that's where it's at with that offensive line. Like I said, between poor play and injury, they're just maneuvering people all over the place and going up against – you know, somebody like the Saints defensive line in the dome, you don't want to have issues with that offensive line. I don't care if they got 60,000 people or 6,000 in there. It don't matter. You don't want to have problems in that dome.
Yeah. And you don't want to have problems with that front four either. When you think about the sack leaders, you think about guys like Aaron Donald, you think about guys like Myles Garrett, you may not be thinking about Trey Hendrickson, who is right. Well, you should.
I know.
Because my guess is you're going to be hearing his name a lot this coming weekend against the San Francisco 49ers. He's got 7.5 sacks on the year, and he's making life miserable
and
for quarterbacks.
I say that not disrespectfully. Like, when I think Saints in defensive line, I'm thinking Cam Jordan. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, you got this guy like Trey coming in here and being one of the top sack guys in the league. So – yeah, man. The offensive line is going to have to be on point.
And part of that, this is the cause and effect thing that we've talked about frequently with Nick Bosa and perhaps the play of Eric Armstead, is your attention gets shifted. With Nick Bosa not around, attention gets shifted. It gets distributed more evenly because Nick Bosa is that game-changing player on the defensive end. For the Saints, you talked about Cam Jordan. Focus is on Cam Jordan. Yeah. Well, guess who's feasting off of that? A guy named Trey Hendrickson. That's who's feasting off of it. And that's the guy who is going to be salivating at the thought of Nick Mullins sitting in that pocket for a split second too long, knowing either he's going to get his hands on him or old Nicky's going to turn around and fling the ball in the air like Conor McGregor on the field of the AT&T Stadium, and it's going to float in the air for about 17 seconds before someone comes and takes it out of the sky and potentially takes it to the house for six.
That's one of the many things that concerns me about this game on Sunday, but Nick Mullins' decision-making. It's been a flaw of his all year, even in the games where he was good. In the 2018 season, the ones where he was bad, the decision making was horrible. It's not a good look going into that Superdome and having that defensive line getting at you, and your flaw is decision making. It doesn't invoke confidence at all.
let's bring in Mike Triplett. He covers the New Orleans Saints for ESPN. And, Mike, we're thrilled that you're joining us. We'll bring you right into the conversation. We didn't expect before the year started that we'd be here at Week 10 talking about the matchup of Trey Hendrickson versus Nick Mullins. And I can tell you from a 49er perspective, that's kind of scary. Nick Mullins isn't the guy that you want back there with this Saints defense putting the pressure on him.
No, the whole matchup is not what we expected, I'd imagine. I mean, the last time they came in the Superdome last 48-46, it decided the number one seed in the NFC. And obviously the Saints have not been perfect for the first 8 weeks of this season, but you just saw them reach their absolute peak on Sunday night. So this is a game where they need to take advantage of you know, the depleted roster that they're facing this week and make sure they don't let up. But, yeah, Trey Hendrickson versus Nick Mullins, not exactly how we drew it up.
That's the graphic there for CBS. There's the big game, Trey Hendrickson versus Nick Mullins.
Man, Mike, one of the things, another one from the 49er perspective is, you know, people look at what happened on Sunday against Tampa Bay and New Orleans is flying high, and you look at this maybe a letdown game, maybe a trap game. I say the Saints are probably looking for a little get back from what happened last year at the Superdome. And I don't think they look at the 49ers and they don't care if it's the same team as last year or a bunch of practice players. They want their get back. They want to stomp the 49ers while they're down. So I don't think a trap game or a letdown is an option. Is that kind of the theme that's been going around the locker room and around that team this week?
Yeah, and most importantly, what happened when they lost to the 49ers last year is they lost number one seed. And they actually ended up having to be the 3 seed last year with a 13-3 record. Mm. And you know, first-round playoff exit while San Francisco went to the Super Bowl. The Saints know full well how important the number one seed is, more important than ever this year since there's only one bye. So they know they can't afford any letdown games, and they had enough of them in the first half of the season. It took this team a while to get going. I think they would love to run the table the rest of this season. There's not going to be any relax in this team. And if they need a reminder, they've got some former 49ers helping motivate them. And Emmanuel Sanders, who played such a big role in that game, and Quan Alexander, who could be making his debut this week.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about the Saints a moment ago. It feels like they're just quietly really good. Am I wrong in that? Like they're not making the noise that they normally do, but yet here they are. They're 6-2. You're talking about running the table. Like what can you attribute that to?
Well, look, they've been the best. They've had the best record in the league over the last 4 years now. 11-5, 13-3, 13-3, 6-2. So obviously they're in it every year, and I think people's preseason power rankings reflected that. But they put people to sleep on them this year. You know, they Drew Brees, the last time they played a team out here, well, not your area anymore, the Raiders in Las Vegas, Monday Night Football in Week 2, it was a dreadful performance. They got clobbered, and they didn't look great in their next Monday Night performance where they had to use overtime to beat the Chargers. And Michael Thomas wasn't playing from Week 1 until just this past week. And they had not put together a complete game like they did against Tampa Bay. So I think people just sort of slowly started to be like, oh, you know what, the Saints don't have it anymore. Drew Brees doesn't have it anymore. When, in fact, it's starting to look a little like they might have just taken a little while to get going and they're starting to peak right now. When this team does hit its peak, it's as good as anyone else in the NFC.
Let me stay right there with Drew Brees, because I didn't watch the game on Sunday live, and I went back and watched it later. But when I saw the score, you know, at the time it was 31-0, and I was like, oh, well, they must have lit him up, you know, on the offensive end, and Drew Brees was back at it. And then you kind of get to watch the numbers, and I don't want to say they're pedestrian, but they're not what you would think for Drew Brees in a score like that. You would think maybe he's pushing 350, maybe 400 yards, 4 touchdowns. Still had his 4 touchdowns, but it was more he finished 222 or something like that. What is it with Drew Brees now this year? Is he showing signs of diminishing, or is he trying to get it going as the season goes along as well? Like, what do you see with him?
No, you know what? It's really been the same Drew Brees in this entire area that I was talking about, 2017 till now, he's not throwing for over 5,000 yards anymore. He's throwing for more like 4,000. But highest completion percentage in a league, highest passer rating in a league, very few turnovers, efficiency, efficiency, efficiency. What he did do against Tampa Bay in the first, 19 minutes of that game, he completed passes to 11 different players, which was tied his personal best. And Jameis Winston completed a pass to the fullback later. So all told, the Saints completed passes to 12 different players. It tied the most in, 30-plus years. So they can spread the ball around. Alvin Kamara is playing so well. Michael Thomas is back. Emmanuel Sanders has been a great addition. They got Taysom Hill going last week. Jared Cook at tight end. That's what they are. They're a find-the-open guy, move the chains, have one of the best third-downs offenses in the league, be efficient, don't turn it over. And Drew Brees is a killer at that. It's not throwing it down the field and lighting up the stat sheets. It's just being incredibly efficient. That was not there in the first couple of games of the season, but he's gotten back to that. He's back to completing more than 75% of his passes for the last 2 months.
Mike Triplett covers the Saints for ESPN. Since you mentioned his name, where do you stand on Taysom Hill? let me rephrase that, Mike.
Yeah.
Help us learn, because I'm going to be honest, we don't get it. Could you explain Taysom Hill to us like we're a five-year-old?
This is my story for tomorrow. I don't get the hate, to be honest with you. You are in the majority, I think, right now, but he's mostly an extension of the run game. I mean, when he comes in, there's a 90% chance you're going to see a run play. And the whole theory behind it is sort of the same theory behind wildcat packages, which is when the quarterback is the runner, all of a sudden it's 11 on 11 instead of 10 on 11. It's more efficient than a handoff because, the quarterback usually just stands off to the side after he hits the football off. Now the quarterback is the runner. And I'm putting this story together for tomorrow, but since Taysom Hill started becoming a thing in 2018, he's fourth in the NFL in yards per rush, right behind Lamar Jackson and actually right behind Raheem Mostert, who, when healthy, has been number two. It's the top five is, it's got Lamar Jackson, Russell Wilson, Taysom Hill. I mean, rusher almost runs for 6 yards to carry. And then he also has that threat that he might throw it, which he did in this last game, 2 times for 50-plus yards. So he's really tough to defend when you use him in spurts. But what I think is so funny is he gets held to the standard that if he ever has a zero-yard carry, immediately it's oh, my God, they're getting too cute. Why did they do that? Alvin Kamara can run for 0 yards. Latavius Murray can run for 0 yards. But Taysom Hill is never allowed to have a zero-yard carry. But he still averages 5.5 yards a carry. He's probably the most productive player on the field this past week. So I see no reason why he shouldn't be part of the package.
I can't think of anybody who would react like that to a poor Taysom Hill carry. Just a quick follow-up. Could it be, because you asked, you don't get the hate, do you think, could it be the money that he makes?
The big contract, because he is used sparingly. I mean, he's a guy who only touches the ball 5-6 times a game at most, and they finally started using him more these last 2 weeks. He had gone pretty quiet earlier this year, and there's still absolutely a lot of doubt about whether he is a future actual starting quarterback. The Saints have talked about that a lot, and there's a lot of skeptics about whether he could be a starting quarterback in the NFL as opposed to just a guy who, is a part-time running back / receiver / tight end / special team.
Mike, full transparency, my partner is definitely referring to me when it comes to Taysom Hill here. And you know what? When you think about it, it's no fault of his own, but I think the money is the issue. And now, because of COVID, I'm sure you're not attending as many games as you had. If you've heard the broadcasters talk about a Taysom Hill 5-yard run, like we just saw Bo Jackson, Tony Dorsett, and Barry Sanders. It is endless entirely. But, all that is no fault of Taysom. I'll be completely honest with you. That's no fault of Taysom. He goes out there and does what he's supposed to do. It's all the extra stuff. But, he had a great game on Sunday.
He's a polarizing player.
He definitely is.
It's fascinating.
It's funny, though, those analysts on TV started to turn on him, too. it seemed like they were dropping like flies in the first 4 weeks of this season, But the one that always cracks me up is the taking the ball out of Drew. You know, that's the popular one. Why would you take the ball out of your Hall of Fame quarterback's hands? And I'm kind of like, what's the difference between that and a handoff? You're taking the ball out of Drew Brees' hands when he hands it off.
That's a good point. That's a good point. One quick one, Damien, real quick that I have for Mike. The Michael Thomas situation.
Yeah.
Around the country, it's been kind of looked at as like weird, possibly dysfunctional. Is that overblown there in New Orleans? Is it just, you know, he was injured and that's it? Or has there been something there that they had to mend the fences with?
Well, yeah, no, there was a little more than just an injury. I mean, the team not only, you know, benched him for a game for a disciplinary action, but they were pretty public. I mean, they could have hidden it if they wanted to. But I think they wanted to make a statement that, like, Michael Thomas is not above the rules, even though he's, you know, a superstar player. So, you know, that usually doesn't happen after just a one-time incident. But his reaction to it seems to be positive. There's no indication that he was, you know, holding out from the team or demanding a trade. I know there was some speculation about that, but no, you know, firm reports that, you know, he doesn't want to be here. He said all the right things since then. He came back and he, you know, played his role in this win. And I think he's going to be a, you know, big part of where they want to go for the rest of the season. The one thing that was clear is they had no interest in trading him. That is for sure.
We really appreciate you, Mike. Thanks for carving out some time for us. Enjoy the game this weekend.
Appreciate you, Mike.
Anytime. Thank you, guys.
That's Mike Triplett, covers the New Orleans Saints for ESPN. He mentioned Quan Alexander. It's fascinating. Like, Quan Alexander very well may be healthy enough, and it looks like he absolutely is healthy enough to go against the San Francisco 49ers. Yeah. I got to imagine he might be the most popular guy in the locker room this week with that defense. Like, hey, so tell us a little bit more.
What we got to do here? Where we got to go? Where we need to be? Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Quan, man. Quan got a lot of he got a lot of, I don't want to say hate. I mean, his play wasn't, it probably didn't fit.
The trade made sense.
Yeah, it made sense. And, you know, the way people like myself loved Quan, it probably didn't match up for the actual production that he gave. But I loved Quan, man. The Hot Boys last year, when he came back for that Minnesota game in the playoffs, oh, man, I thought there was no stopping the 49ers at that point, man. So shout out to Quan. Wish him the best out there in New Orleans. And, just not this week, that's all.
I'm mad I never queued up Hit the Quan anytime we talked about Quan Alexander.
Can you hit the Quan?
No.
I can't. No. I can't dance, Damien, to be honest with you. I'm not a dancer. I bop. You know what I'm saying? You see me coming back from, I'll bop a little bit.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Bop a lot.
Yeah, but I'm not Chris Brown out there.
Well, no, there are very few. No, like
I'm not
like,
even a Marion.
Would you be embarrassed, like, if it was like, we out, we got to, you know, back in the day, you know, we used to have these things, and I know I'm going to show my age here. They were called parties where you'd actually be around other human beings. I know it sounds crazy, but we used to do this, like, way back in the day. We used to have gatherings with, like, actual people, and music would play. It would be a really good time. Would you, like, never hit the floor,
floor. I'd be on the floor, but I ain't doing too much. You know, right. Like Fat Joe said, I just pull up my band to do the rock away. Yeah. That's about it. But, yeah, we out on the floor, no doubt, no doubt.
Former 44, President Obama called it. He was talking to Dave Letterman on that Netflix show. He said, you know what I do? I stay in the pocket. When I dance, I just stay in the pocket.
That's about
is that what
it.
You do?
That is perfect, yes.
You just stay in the pocket and move
I stay
back
in
and
the
forth.
Pocket. You know, one thing, if I'm really feeling it, I do like a – you know, I get my Puffy on. You know, Puffy be moving his shoulders.
Yeah,
and all.
Yeah.
You know, I'll do that if I'm really feeling it. But like I said, you're not going to catch me doing no Chris Brown, no Omarion, nothing like that. That's not my bag.
I wanted a shiny suit more than I wanted my next breath of fresh air, man.
I like to say that I brought Sean John to the West Coast. Because when I saw they had Sean John, I was like, I'm on it.
You didn't.
I had to. I didn't see nobody with Sean John before I did. I went to Get a Clue and got a red and black Sean John shirt. Okay. I had to be the first one out here.
Okay. Let's go with that. You know, while we're staying in the pocket while we're dancing, we're completely out of pocket with some of these NBA rumors. And the Russell Westbrook one. Woo-hoo-hoo!
Let's go, man.
This is good.
They got nice houses in Laguna, Folsom, you know. They got places for them.
On Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
Now, back to D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320.
want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you. 916-349-1320. You can get us on social media as well, at D-Lo NKC, regardless of the platform, whether it's Twitter or Instagram. We have got you covered at ESPN 1320 as well, if you want all the breaking news and fun little tidbits. There was some breaking news yesterday. Russell Westbrook, he had been part of some trade rumors, potentially, I don't know, Clippers, the Knicks, which made me vomit here live on the radio. That was
nothing
fun.
Wrong with that. There's nothing
no,
wrong with
it's
that.
Everything is wrong with that.
Russ
I hate that idea.
It's all good. Like,
no. Please, no. Please,
you're
please.
You're right. No. We need fans for Russ to be in the Garden. I'd much rather have fans with Russ in the Garden. Yeah.
There were two horrible options when I found out Russell Westbrook was going to be traded from Oklahoma City. And when he's like, oh, they're coming to an agreement. Sam Presti's going to send him somewhere. The two worst options were the New York Knicks and the Houston Rockets. Because I did not want to have to root for the Houston Rockets. I don't know why I have this thing with them, but I do. And I think it boils down to, for some reason, there was this debate like between James Harden and Russell Westbrook, and I chose Russell Westbrook. Mm-hmm. And like the James Harden people hate Russell Westbrook, and I like the Russell Westbrook people hate James Harden. I don't even know how this stupid stuff happens. Like, I can't figure out why Warrior fans hate Russell Westbrook. That's one of the most fascinating things in sports to me.
I
don't get it.
I get it. I understand. I don't agree. I love Russ, not as much as you, but I love Russ, right? But he's been a jackass every step of the way. Every step
to everybody, not just the Warriors, to everybody.
Right, but yeah, the Warriors fans, they hate him. They hate James Harden. They hate LeBron. They hate everybody. Like they just hate everybody. They got no respect for anybody in the league. That's why Warrior fans irritate me.
Oh, you shifted this towards Warriors. Okay, yeah, that's fine. I don't have a problem with Warrior fans. I just never understood why. I felt like it was like they were protective of Kevin Durant, as if Kevin Durant hated Russell Westbrook. And so there was this thing like, well, if Kevin Durant's our guy, it's like, shouldn't you celebrate Russell Westbrook? Because if you dislike him that much, didn't he drive Kevin Durant to you? Wouldn't that be reason to like build a statue for Russell Westbrook, given if that was
Russ.
The case?
They hate Russ.
They really do.
They can't stand Russ.
They really do. And apparently Russ, I guess, is on the move. He wants to be out of Houston. Again, Houston appears to be a bit of a mess. He's got 3 years, $132.6 million remaining on his contract, and he has told the folks in Houston, I'm good. Let's move on.
Damien, I'm going to ask for my roses right now. I'm going to ask for my roses because about 3 weeks ago, you and Marshall thought I was crazy when I said the move to make in Houston is to blow that whole thing up. And now here we are. Nobody's happy. Everybody's coming with the same take that I said 3 weeks ago. Blow it up. Get rid of it. If you can, get rid of them all, including James Harden. You're not going nowhere. I need my roses.
Yes, you will get those roses along with the roses for introducing Sean John to the entire West
Thank
Coast.
You.
We'll
Thank
make
you.
Sure
I did.
That we'll,
I get a clue. We'll Downtown sure. Plaza. They were the first ones to get it on the West Coast. And I was probably the first one to cop. It was the cursive Sean John, black shirt, red cursive. I had to be the first. Had
Literally,
to.
Yes. I definitely didn't have a white one with a black cursive. Definitely did
when,
not.
When,
nor,
no.
Nor
when,
did
that's
I
the
have,
question.
Nor
when.
Did I have the matching jeans. And I definitely didn't get it from Get a Clue either, which was the only place that you could buy hip-hop clothes in the entire area.
You didn't have that
areas.
Velour suit, though.
But who are you talking to, young man? Like, are you kidding me right now? Which one did you want? The Aniche one? The Fat Farm one? Who are you talking to?
The Sean John one. Did nobody? I had to go to the Bronx to get the Sean John velour.
Somebody get this, dude, please.
This? I really need to know.
My goodness.
Didn't say I was the only, but I was the first.
Okay, the very first. We'll get that confirmed by our folks over at Get a Clue that Kenny Caraway bought the very first Sean John that they laid out there on the table for everybody to buy. We'll get confirmation that Kenny Caraway was the very first person in the market to buy an entry. Oh, look at the brother over there. Oh, let me go get one of those.
Yeah. That's about right.
I don't give Fox Sports any roses ever, nor do I give Nick Wright any roses ever, quite honestly, because I think they're all awful. But I don't want to take credit for this because it was a conversation that hit the national scale here today revolving Russell Westbrook.
LeBron's favorite teammates. Look it up. Let's go Sacramento. Whenever you need to make a trade, you should always call the Kings. Buddy Hield, all he wants to do is shoot wide open threes. And the always valuable Kings first round pick. What about Indiana?
What about that? Buddy Hield and number 12 for Russell Westbrook the third. You in?
I've been thinking about this all morning long. And I think if somebody's asking for a definitive answer from me, I think I'm in. I think I'm in. The thing that gives me pause is the contract. I want to get rid of Buddy's contract to free up that financial flexibility that we keep talking about. You go get Russ, you definitely don't have financial flexibility, right? But I think – what's going on, neighbor? I think I do it. My man, shout out to my man Leek. He put it out there pretty simplistic. He said, Russ isn't going to get you a championship, but he'll break the drought, right? And then I thought about it, and I was like, well, Buddy Hield and Devin Vassell probably won't do either. So why not take the guy that's going to break the drought for you?
No, I'm hearing what you're saying about financial flexibility. And maybe if I'm an aggressive, flexible, weren't those the words from...
Mm-hmm.
From our Lord and Savior, Monty McNair. You know what? I like this idea. What, Russell Westbrook, 3 years, $132 million. Ooh, that's a lot.
That's a lot of money.
Tell you what. We've got Buddy. Buddy fits. Like, you, this is what James Harden wants, right? Penetrate, pop. Penetrate, mm-hmm. pop. You know, Buddy can be really, really good for you. He's a top three shooter in the league. If you just get him to stand still, mm-hmm. tell him not to dribble, and say, for the love of God, dear Buddy Hield, do not try to emulate what James Harden does. Stand over there. We'll get you open. You'll get 10 threes a game. Yeah. Easy. But we do have this thing about cap and flexibility. I'll tell you what. We're going to send you Harrison Barnes as well. I want you to take Harrison. You know, because let's be honest. We're taking back $132 million. Yeah. You've got to help us out here. We need to clear up some space. We'll send you Harrison Barnes and Buddy Hield. And then you send Russell Westbrook to us.
Now we're talking. And I love Harrison. I don't want Harrison to leave Sacramento. But now we're talking.
No, neither.
Now we're talking.
And, this isn't happening.
Come on. Don't this kill my dreams, happening. Bro. Look, if I look at, and people talk about the fit, I get it. Russ can't shoot the ball anymore. De'Aaron Fox, it's not a good fit. But I look at it like this. One thing that really stood out to me in the bubble is the Kings lack somebody outside of Fox who can get their own shot. Yeah. Like, nobody can get to the bucket and create their own shot on this roster. And they had no answers in the bubble. Especially, it really stuck out in that Mavs game when it was like, remember people were like, Fox was just going one-on-one. Well, he was the only one that could get a goddamn shot.
Yeah.
Like, he was it. Everybody else, they weren't leaving Buddy. They weren't leaving Bogey, so there was no kick-out possibilities. And you can't put the ball in their hands to get a bucket. So at the very least, you got somebody like Russ who can create his own shot and get to the foul line. That's another aspect of his game that I like. There's flaws with Russ. I get it. I understand. But this is what you got to do if you're Sacramento. Sometimes this is what you got to do. You got to roll the dice on an all NBA type guy to see if it can happen. Because there's no other way outside the draft that you're getting an all NBA guy to come through those doors. You got to roll the dice.
No, there's a number of interesting things about this. One, this is a tweet that I missed earlier, and thank you to Morgan Reagan for retweeting this a moment ago. Today is Russell Westbrook's birthday.
Hey, happy birthday,
which
Russ.
I did know that, of course. I've sent him all sorts of gifts already. I have an alert. Yeah, I have an alert. Russell Westbrook's birthday. The Houston Rockets sent him a happy birthday message.
All right, Houston. All right, Houston Rockets. All right, Fertitta.
Okay. I wonder if it's just one of those doing? Like... It's like a scheduled post.
It might be in the drafts already.
Yeah, like it's already there. It's scheduled to go out on the tweet deck or whatever, and all of this news breaks, you forget. And you can't delete it because everybody's already seen it. It's been retweeted God knows how many times. But, yeah, that amused me. I think Russ turns 32 today. I loved Russell Westbrook. I know all of his flaws. Like, I completely get it. I don't know what he does for the Sacramento Kings. Like, he's instantly the biggest star this team has had. I mean, you know, Vince Carter is up there near the top. What does it ultimately amount to? I don't know. I don't know what Russell Westbrook wants for the remaining years of this deal or the remaining years of his career. I don't know if this is a – he doesn't have a lot of leverage with 3 years left. You don't have the old, I'm not going to re-sign with you. So I don't really know what – you know, what muscle you can flex if you're Russell Westbrook to send me to, you know, contending team A, contending team B. I don't know who really looks at that and goes, oh, bring him here. And here's another question, because I'm thinking, I think I said this to you yesterday, Russell Westbrook in Miami. And I know you expressed wanting to keep space open for being able to pursue Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think
we talked about Chris Paul in Miami.
Okay, Chris Paul.
Yeah,
okay,
what? Same.
Like it's kind of the same thing in terms of finances and things like that.
You're right, we did talk about Chris Paul. Somebody suggested, why don't you just trade these guys back? It would work out best for everybody.
So that brings up another question. You're listening to D'Lo and Casey on KIFM, West Sacramento, or radio.com sports station, and driven by Lashers Elk Grove Dodge. I'm Damian Barling. He's Kenny Caraway. We're so happy that you're here with us. 916-349-1320 if you want to be a part of the show. Here's another question, because you got D'Antoni, who the Rockets said whether they meant this or not, it was said publicly, no, we want to engage in contract. We want to re-sign Mike D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni told them on the way home from Orlando that I'm good. Doesn't even have a head coaching job. Now, maybe he thought he had one. That's an entirely different story. But he's joined Steve Nash as an assistant in Brooklyn. So he's just like, I'm just going to give up one of the 30 jobs in the NBA and go do something else because I don't want to be here anymore. Daryl Morey, out. The architect behind this whole Rockets run that we've seen over the last however many years. Chris Paul leaves with, I don't know that disdain is the word, but not, you know, whatever types of feelings. Yeah, no, you know them vibes, as my partner would say, and they ain't good with Chris Paul and James Harden. And now you've got a situation where Russell Westbrook wants out. Is nobody going to point the finger at James Harden except for me? Is nobody going to say, like, you know what? Hey, maybe playing with this guy freaking sucks.
I know for sure the Chris Paul situation was because of James Harden. I know. I'm very sure I can say that. Russell Westbrook, I mean, I don't think him and James are necessarily an issue. But I don't think Russell wants to be in Houston no more. We talked about it before. Poor Steven Silas. We talked about it, Damian.
Sure.
We said this is maybe the worst job in the league.
Yeah, for reasons that you're not used to it. Yeah, this is the worst job in the league for reasons that you're not used to being the worst job in the league. Like, when you have a superstar, much less two of them, normally it's the Cleveland Cavaliers that are the worst job in the league.
Or we can say in the Sacramento
Kings. Yeah, or that.
Yeah.
It's never associated with a team that has two MVPs in recent years. Like, these guys weren't
All
MVPs
NBA
5 years ago. Like, these
this
guys were
year.
MVPs in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And this is a tough job for Steven Silas. Like, this is a brutal job. And I don't know. I've been pointing my finger at Harden for a while. Like, how come he's not held responsible for the failures of this team? It's Chris Paul's fault. I believe Mike D'Antoni deserves a massive brunt of the blame, you know, for where this team has been over the years. Again, this isn't saying that Mike D'Antoni's not a very, very good coach. This isn't saying that Mike D'Antoni isn't a great coach. He's not a coach that's going to win you a championship. He's been shown that for years. There's been no adjustments when this team has struggled from three. They have made no adjustments. Their mentality is just go out there and keep shooting because eventually they're going to fall, except
when they don't.
When they don't.
Yeah,
and it seems to fall on all of the people around James Harden and never on him, and I don't understand.
James Harden is one of the greatest offensive players we've ever seen in this game. Hands down, one of the greatest we've ever seen. But he might not be that guy. As a matter of fact, I don't think there's might to it. He's not that guy. He's not. And the crazy thing is, he's more of a number two, maybe even a number three in a certain situation. But after having all this time of being a number one type guy, would he even accept being a number two type guy? I don't know. But he's not that. He's not the franchise. He's not the franchise. He's not.
If Chris Paul wasn't the perfect player for James Harden, who is?
Somebody that won't get on his head. And for James Harden,
then that's not winning a title. Like, if you then you're not winning a championship.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is.
Okay.
But to the original point, though, Damian, you said you don't know what it does for the Kings. I'm going to ask you, though. If Houston was like, I like this. I think we're willing to make this move. Would you do it? Would you bring Russ to
Sacramento?
I know you would. I know Damian Barling would definitely bring Russ to Sacramento. But let's try to step out of Damian Barling. If you were a non-biased, he's got the Russ bobblehead ready to go.
tell me more. Like all we got to do is just airbrush this little OKC jersey to say
that's
Sacramento.
That's a cold
little
fade
no
they
problem.
Got on that one too. They hooked up the fade on that Russ
right.
bobblehead. Yeah,
they did it right.
But
of course I would
try to be non-biased.
I can't. Like, Russ is the one player that I can't speak without bias from. I will speak. You know, I always say this. Like, fans, we are the stupidest people on the planet. And whether you're a fan of the San Francisco 49ers, whether you're a fan of the Sacramento Kings, the Raiders, the Warriors, whoever, you're stupid because you think irrationally. All of us are the same. I don't have a team that I particularly, like, root for and cheer for. Mm. I have players. This is a player that I irrationally root for. I can't explain it. I don't know why. I've said it a million times. I know this dude's shortcomings.
Yeah.
I do. But I love him. So, yes. What do you want? You can have it. Send him here.
I think I'd do it. I really do. I think I would do it. This is crazy because, like I said, financially, that's the thing that gives me pause. And I don't know what it does for the franchise. It's not one of those guaranteed get you to the playoffs. Now, I don't know that, but... You got to roll the dice if you're the Kings on a guy
so you
like
got,
that.
So you've got 3 years left on this deal. And let's also, we're having fun. That's what we're doing. This is sports talk. We're just sitting around talking about basketball. We're talking about the Kings. It's hashtag rumor season. Mm-hmm. S-Z-N. Hashtag rumor season.
You know, for the longest time, I didn't know what S-Z-N was. Like, for embarrassingly too long. So what the hell are they talking about? I don't get it.
Sometimes you just shouldn't admit stuff on the radio, buddy. Like, I know.
I'm sorry. I speak English. I'm sorry. I use proper grammar. I'm sorry, everybody in Twitter world. Season is S-E-A-S-O-N, not S-E-N. I'm sorry.
Again, this is coming from the guy who introduced Sean John to an entire coast. Like, I just.
But we're having fun.
Yeah, we're having fun. There's no substance behind this. Like, we're just talking. We're talking about basketball. It's that time of year. Like, normally in June we're going, it's Christmas here with the NBA. No, literally, it's actually Christmas and rumor season at the same time almost.
Yeah, we're getting both.
So that's all we're doing here is talking. There's no substance behind any of this. I'm not of the belief that Russell Westbrook comes in and stunts the growth of De'Aaron Fox or the Sacramento Kings evolution or anything like that. But Monty McNair used to be in Houston. He's been around Russell Westbrook. Mm-hmm. Does that factor in to any of this? What is Russell Westbrook's response? Or does it even matter, which goes back to the 3 years, you know, point. Mm-hmm. What is Russell Westbrook's response if Houston calls him and says, okay, you wanted to leave. We got you. You're headed to Northern California. Nope. Not that Northern California team. You're going to the Capitol, homie. You're going to Sacramento. Enjoy.
It's not L.A., but it is back in California. So, I don't know. Maybe that factors in.
And it's not Oakland either, or I guess it's not Oakland anymore. It's not San Francisco.
I don't think he'd want anything to do with the Warriors. Like, I think the vitriol is mutual.
Okay.
I don't think the Warriors fans and everybody, they don't like Russ, and I don't think Russ likes them. I think that's mutual.
Okay.
But I look at it, by all accounts, from everything I heard, I'm not unbelievably connected, but I know a couple people that know a couple people. By all accounts, I don't think teammates have ever had an issue with Russell Westbrook. I think he's kind of beloved by his teammates when they're, you know, when they're on the same team. Kevin Durant, obviously, I don't think Kevin Durant hated Russell Westbrook. I just think he was ready to move on. You know what I mean? But he didn't hate Russ as a teammate or anything like that. So when you talk about stunting Fox's growth and bringing him in and things of that nature, from everything that I've heard in his career, teammates like Russell Westbrook.
Reading between the lines, I always thought the bigger frustration with Kevin Durant was Billy Donovan.
Possibly.
Again, and that's just reading between the lines, because I don't think he's ever said anything outwardly about Russ. Mm-hmm. Or I think we look at the body language on the court, and mm-hmm. I'm coming, and we see all of those different, you know, square offs and that type of stuff. That's Russell Westbrook's aggressive personality.
Yeah.
But he did the same types of things with Chris Paul. But guess what? In the bubble, guess who, you know, who is working out the, you know, the day of the boycotted games?
Mm-hmm.
Guess who's working together in this? Chris Paul is the, you know, the head of the Players Association. Yeah. Him and Russell Westbrook standing in a hallway, you know, arm in arm, trying to get this thing, you know, worked out for, you know, talking about what they're going to be doing moving forward. So a lot of that stuff is just competitiveness on the court. Once you're off the court, it's different. I know he's surly reporter, surly with reporters. I know, you know, we talk about teammates loving Russell Westbrook. No reporter that I'm aware of has a great relationship or even a good relationship with Russell Westbrook.
No.
But none of that stuff matters.
No.
If he comes in, can he help the team? Like, cool. Let's make it happen.
Help the team. If we want to go a step further, once again, from everything we hear, great in the community. Great off the court. Great.
All I ask is the Kings let me in for 31 games this upcoming year. Let me into the goal. I'll sit in the middle of the arena, like 25 rows up, wearing my Be Heard mask. I won't bother a soul.
Look,
and
here,
I'll get to watch.
I'm going to tell you right now, if we can get into the building, things get back to normal, I'm going to let everybody know. I'm IG living from a distance, Damian, when, like, Russ passes him. I'm just IG living it. I'm like, check it out, guys. Here's the moment we've all been waiting for. What's the closest you've ever been to Russ?
Oh, I've met Russ.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, many times. Yeah. No, I've been around Russell Westbrook.
Nice.
The first time I met Russell Westbrook was in New Orleans, the All-Star weekend that Dwight did that dunk where he didn't really dunk it.
The Superman dunk.
Superman's
in the building.
And he just threw it. Like, I was at that All-Star weekend.
Young Russ.
And he was in the rookie sophomore game.
Mm.
That was the first time I met him. I met him a handful of times. He didn't know I worked in the media. In fact, I didn't work in the media at the time. So he was always fine with me. very nice to me.
I used to work at a basketball facility in L.A. And I remember, I think I might have said this before, but Russ would come in there with his dad every day and just work, just those two. And today that's kind of rare because you see, like, trainers and, you know, it gets a little theatrical sometimes with how these guys work out and they train. And Russ was like real meat and potatoes. I was working the front desk. He'd come by. Hey, how you doing? Good to see you today. Same thing with his dad. And they would just work. They would work for like 2 hours, just shooting. He was quiet. He didn't say much, but he was the nicest guy. I got nothing but pleasant experiences with Russ. Like you said, I'm in the media now. Maybe it would be different, but
we just won't tell him. You know, man, it doesn't matter. We'll just show
like
up every.
Us, though. I think he'd be good with us.
We'll just show up every game. We'll hide our credential. And we won't say nothing. It's fine. It's no big deal.
Russ to Sacramento. Let's do it. Sign the deal.
What about LaMarcus Aldridge to Golden State? Would you sign up for that if you're a Warrior fan?
Wow. No.
Really?
Yeah. No. LaMarcus Aldridge is no. He's really good. I'm not on the LaMarcus Aldridge guy. You got the number 2 pick in the draft? Nah, I'm going to keep it and get Wiseman. I'm good.
Hmm. I feel like LaMarcus Aldridge, he's really good.
He's good. He's good.
Okay.
He's a good ball player. No shade.
Kind of. A little shady. Little bit, you know, a little bit, like under, like not a big tree. It's a little tree, though. Just
good
a little comfy spot. Like,
doesn't excite me. Let's put it to you that way. Nah. Okay. LaMarcus.
But does he need to if he's playing in Golden State?
I'd like to see what Wiseman can do.
Okay. All right. We'll step out. We'll come back. There's more NBA rumors to talk about, including the Kings and the number 12 pick. This doesn't have anything to do with Russell Westbrook. This was actually reported a couple of days ago. And another player that we haven't talked about a lot, and I think we should, and it's Nemanja Bjelica. There's an interesting situation with him and his option for the team to pick up. We'll discuss that as D'Lo and KC continue here on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
Tiger Woo. I like him.
My pick for the Masters. My pick.
Of course. He's
him and Rom. Is that how you say his name, Rom?
See, stop it. Rom's not far. I mean, actually, he's one stroke behind Tiger, who is three strokes behind the leader, Paul Casey. Paul Casey right now, 7 under the first round. Done for those guys, by the way. Tiger Woods, 4 under. And your guy is 3 under.
Just wait till he gets the hole 16. Wait till he gets the hole 16 and watch what he does.
Okay. All right. He already went through hole 16 today. Okay. You know, he goes through it four times.
He's saving it for Sunday.
Okay, he's going to do that shot on Sunday with Masters on the line.
Yeah,
he's
Masters
on the
line.
Across the water.
He's tied with Tiger for the lead on 16, and he's going to pull that out.
I'm just going to end it. I'm just going to go Harlem Globetrotters on him and put an end to this. Can we bring the commercial conversation to the air about Drew Holiday is a name that is circulating all over NBA Twitter, NBA rumors, all of that stuff. And the conversation was brought up because Jesse, our technician in the studio, is a big Celtics guy.
Poor guy.
And he said, would you swap Drew Holiday for Kemba Walker? And we both had totally different reactions because I said, hell no, I would not swap Drew Holiday for Kemba Walker. Not even close.
It wasn't even a thought for Damian.
No, I would not. It's Russ first and Kemba second. Like, I really like
Kemba
Walker.
I didn't know Kemba was that high on your list.
No, I love Kemba Walker, but I'll full disclosure, like, I lived in Connecticut when he was tearing up, you know, the NCAA tournament. So I
do you feel the same way about my man Shabazz Napier?
I do not. I don't like anybody named Napier. That's not true.
I like
Shabazz. That's,
didn't even say what I did.
Just not. Kemba, dude, you remember what Kemba did in that NCAA tournament, man? He was just crazy. Not just the NCAA tournament, but the Big East tournament before. He was phenomenal.
So I asked that question because for a long time, me and my man Alan, we'd have a discussion. He's a big Kemba guy. And I like him. I love Kemba. Like, don't get it twisted. I love Kemba. But I always thought Shabazz Napier was a freshman that year. Kemba did that run. And I said, Shabazz is going to be up there with Kemba when it's all said and done. Now, Shabazz's career didn't pan out the same way, but I got the last laugh because Shabazz, his senior year, basically did the same thing Kemba did. I think he won 4 games in the Big East tournament, got to the NCAA tournament, and took his team to the national championship.
Yeah.
So you got to have the same kind of love for Shabazz.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
No, I don't.
But you were didn't waste no time.
No, yeah, absolutely no, not. No, I wouldn't. No.
I thought about it.
Mm-mm.
I thought about it. And I came to the conclusion I wouldn't swap him out because I really like Kemba too. But I could probably make the argument if I wanted to that maybe Drew Holiday might be better for that team than Kemba Walker is. A bigger guard. Little more can do a little more as far as defending and doesn't have to have the ball in his hands to be, you know, to score and to be effective, things of that nature. He might be a better fit.
So do you think the Celtics are missing something? Like, do they need something to get to that next? Because I thought they were going to be in the Eastern Conference. I thought they were going to be in the NBA Finals this year. Do they need something to get to that next spot?
I think they need... I'm really thinking about this now. Oh, take him. Who do you want?
No, the Celtics do not want Buddy Hield. It's a guess on my part. I just feel
the more I think about this, the more it's been presented. I think they need at the point guard position a guy like Drew Holiday. Like I said, a bigger guard, a little more defensive oriented than he is offensive. And Kemba, while he is a monster, I love. See, this sounds crazy because I love Kemba Walker, but he is small at the point guard position. And you talk about, you know, when Miami goes to a big lineup with Jimmy Butler bringing it up, or Milwaukee or Brooklyn, what they're going to do this year with Kyrie and KD. I don't know if Kemba's the guy that can stay in front of a Kyrie. Or we saw he had a problem with Dragic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm sitting here thinking about this on the fly. And, yeah, Jesse, I don't know. You might want to look into that. Might want to look into that.
Because Jesse's making the calls for the Boston Celtics, not Danny Ainge. Yeah.
I make the call for the Kings. Yeah. Jesse makes it for the Celtics. And you are Russ's agent.
Okay, fine. Fair enough. You know, there's a player on the Kings that we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, which we probably should, because he's in kind of a... It's an interesting situation with Nemanja Bjelica. There's a $7.2 million option that the Kings can determine to decide whether to pick up or not. Mm-hmm. And I think that's happening. I don't know that it happens before the draft. I think it does. It's in the coming days, though. I know that for sure. And it's one of those things where, like, if the Kings don't pick it up and Nemanja, you know, chooses to go elsewhere, it's not like they have $7.2 million to spend. Like, it's they either spend it on Nemanja Bjelica or they don't spend it at all.
You mentioned that earlier. I didn't realize that. I thought the seven went to the cap. But it's literally seven for Bjelica or nothing.
Pretty much. Yeah. So, and we, you know, we all know the situation with Buddy Hield and all of these, not Buddy Hield, Bogdan Bogdanovic and the limited amount of cap space they're going to have. So, like, I asked you, what do you do with Belly? What do you do if you're Monty McNair and you've got this $7.2 million option lingering out there for Nemanja Bjelica, who so, also is allergic to defense?
Yeah, he is. So when the first, my initial, and like I said, I'm learning the cap on a whole nother level right now. I know I got to know it a little better, but we talked about this before. The NBA cap is crazy. It's absolutely crazy. So I'm getting, there's something I didn't know today. As far as like the money that Bjelica could possibly get, I thought it would go to the cap for the Kings. It's really just there or nothing.
It's like you know how you can spend money to sign your own players.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's that's basically gotcha. What it is. But like once you're not signing your own players anymore, it's
that
not there.
There. Yeah.
It's not.
So
it's gone.
When I thought it went back to the cap, it was a no-brainer for me. To let go.
Let it go.
It was a no-brainer. But now that's not the case, I've gone back and forth with Belly over his time in Sacramento. There's been times when I thought he has been unbelievably essential to what little success the Kings have had while he's been here, right? Like when they've gone these runs and stuff like that, he has been really, really instrumental in what they're trying to do. And then there's times when I've thought he's been borderline useless out on the floor. And I've just really gone back and forth. I think I'd bring him back. Like I said, I think the X factor is the fact that money, you can't really do nothing else with it. So why not just bring him back? You saw the injuries that they had last year, and he was a savior for any part of the season where they were trying to be competitive and make a run at getting to 500 or to the playoffs or whatever. He was very essential for that. So, you hope you don't have to use him in that type of role again, but just in case you do, you have him there, go ahead, bring him back. But, yeah, I go back and forth with Belly, man. I really do.
It goes into, we don't have a clue how they want to orchestrate this team, they being Monty McNair and his new front office. Mm-hmm. Is it evaluating all of these guys? Is it cutting bait? Is it just like moving on with this, moving on with that? Is it? I can't imagine, because if you're bringing back, you'd essentially just be bringing back the same roster and saying, okay, let's give this a go.
Yeah. And probably wouldn't have Baze, though.
Yeah, Baze isn't. Well,
and
Baze,
I think
was,
Baze is a big part of
but
the
there's virtually no way they're going to be able to. I don't think they're
no
going to be able
no
to
Harry
sign.
Giles.
Yeah, there's no. I don't think they're going to sign anyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not going to be able to sign anyone if they go after Bogdan Bogdanovic. Like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they sign Bogey, that's it. They pretty much have nothing else.
Yeah.
The question is, if they don't, what do they do? Like, are there, like, do you are to Jeremy Grant? Like, who are you going after if you're not going after Bogdan Bogdanovic?
Austin Rivers. And I wouldn't be mad at that. I wouldn't be mad at Austin Rivers. A lot of people think Austin Rivers really stinks. I don't think he really stinks.
Well,
I don't think he's a starting guard, but off the bench, just, hey, try and get buckets. Austin's not bad.
He's not bad. I don't know how to follow that statement up. He's not bad. I think it's like, you know, we were talking with Mike Triplett earlier about Taysom Hill and the hate towards Taysom Hill, and it probably having something to do with his contract. With Austin, it probably has something to do with Doc.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've heard he's not the most liked guy in the locker room.
No.
And, you know, with guys, sometimes it has to do with ladies. And I've heard there have been some issues with Austin Rivers and his choice in ladies. And I've heard that Austin Rivers has, on a time or two, violated trust within a locker room. So
a habitual line stepper.
There you go. A habitual line stepper. That is exactly what he has been, a habitual line stepper. Let's go to Coe. Coe's always stepping the line, though. He gave the big proclamation of firing Billy Donovan, and it came true a couple of days later. 916-349-1320, if you want to jump in. What's up, Coe?
What up, fellas? What up, what up? All right, all right. Check it out. I don't know who the hell the Oklahoma City Thunder hired. I don't know why they won't give Mo Cheeks a deal. You know, Mo Cheeks been the assistant for Billy Donovan. He was the assistant for Scott Brooks. And Mo Cheeks is one of the top, I don't know what we say, top 20 point guards of all time. You know what I'm saying? Why you won't give him a deal? I don't understand that. So that's my first issue with my OKC Thunder. My second issue, I'm mad today.
Uh-oh.
Because they throwing my boy Russ' name around like Russ is just straight trash. And
talk
it's so disrespectful. It's so disrespectful. He got that contract because he was the face of the franchise for OKC. So, yeah, he getting paid a little bit more than he probably should. Yeah, Russ, he can't shoot. Russ ain't been able to shoot his whole career. But you can't take away what Russ brings when he's on the Sacramento. Excuse me. When he's playing on any team. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And all of this, they're trying to send Russ to New York to die or send him to Charlotte to die. Like, come on, man. That's just disrespectful. Russ got a good 4 or 5 years, I believe, left in the tank. Maybe not at the high level that he's at, but he's still got a good 4 or 5 years where he can be a starter. So they need to put some respect on my dude Russ' name and do him good. Don't send him to New York to die, and don't send him over there with Jordan. I know he's a Jordan athlete, but him going to Charlotte is just like Kimba being in Charlotte. Ain't got no help. I mean, Malik Monk, Mikal Bridges. I mean, look at these Kaminsky. Look at that roster. It's horrible. You send Russ over there, he's going to be even more upset than he already is. That's all I got today.
Coke okay, came Coke. In hot today. Came in hot.
Fire.
Yeah.
Fire.
He took two shots at the Knicks that was uncalled for, but that's okay.
No, completely called for. All shots at the Knicks are strongly encouraged.
Don't listen to Damian.
You should listen to me. You should listen to D-Lo and KC every day, Monday through Friday here, 12 to 2. And if you'd like to take shots at the Knicks whenever you call in, feel free. Mo Cheeks is 64 years old. I'm not saying that's why he didn't get the job. I don't know why Mo Cheeks didn't get the job. I know he was being interviewed for it, and it certainly looked like he was, I mean, outwardly, it looked like he was probably the leading candidate for this job. They went with the guy who was already in the organization, which is fine. I'm actually okay with the hire that they made because it was from within. They've obviously been grooming this guy. We've seen that be very successful in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm okay with it. Mo Cheeks is a... He's a fine coach.
Mo Cheeks deserves another job. If Stan Van Gundy gets another job, Mo Cheeks deserves another job.
I don't disagree.
And I know Stan Van has gone to an NBA Finals, and he did well in Miami before Pat came back and all this other stuff. Stan Van is a good coach himself, but he has a retread feel to me. And if you're going to retread with Stan Van Gundy over and over again, I think Mo Cheeks should get the same type of opportunity.
Well, Stan's had how many jobs? Miami, which he wasn't fired from.
Yeah, he went to
shadily lost. Orlando, which he signed here in Sacramento, the Kinkos and Natomas. And
wait,
then Detroit. You don't remember the Stan Van Gundy at the Kinkos and in Sacramento? You don't know that story?
No.
Are you serious?
No,
Stan Van Gundy was going to be the next head coach of the Sacramento Kings. And he got offered the job. Remember, Billy Donovan took the Orlando job. And then Billy Donovan decided he didn't want the Orlando job.
That's right.
And he
went back
to Florida. The Orlando Magic called Stan Van Gundy after he had interviewed with the Kings. He was here in Sacramento. He went to the Kinkos and Natomas, signed his contract, sent it back, grabbed a commercial flight after being flown out here. By ownership, grabbed the commercial flight back to Orlando and took the job as the Magic head coach.
How have I never heard that story before?
I have
no idea. Wow.
You introduced Sean John to the entire West Coast, but you haven't heard that Stan Van Gundy almost became the head coach of the Sacramento. You must have been. That had to have been when you were in L.A. at the time.
It probably was. Yeah, well,
that is a legendary story.
Yeah, because when they went to the finals, when they went to the finals, I was in L.A. and I got stuck in a street parade. Yeah, when the Lakers won. I'll never forget that.
Well, that's no good.
And it was in the hood.
Well, that's really no good.
That was the one time, like, I honked my horn, like, yeah, go Lakers, because I didn't want to be on the other side.
Keep the peace. Yeah, keep the peace.
Had to get up out of there.
Why is the parade going through the hood, by the way?
That's what they do. No, it wasn't the actual parade. It was, like, hours after they won.
It was like
I was trying to get home. Yeah. I was trying to get home and made a wrong. I had been out in L.A. for, like, maybe 2 weeks, so I didn't really know my way around. Got on the wrong freeway. Tried to get off and get back on the right freeway. And when I got off, I was like, yeah, I was in the wrong spot.
For those who aren't like super familiar with LA, I don't know that people really recognize how close South Central is to Beverly Hills.
Bro.
It's like literally around the corner. Like it's right a couple there. Of streets away.
It's right there.
Like you got Beverly Hills 90210 being filmed over here, and you got How to Survive in South Central being filmed over here. And it's just it is worlds apart, but in terms of distance, they're right next to each other.
Absolutely.
You take
Absolutely.
A wrong turn in LA, boy.
So yeah, I was in
you're gonna wind up in a
hood victory
parade,
and I said, "Hold on, man, I just need to get up out of here," because I think one person didn't honk, and they didn't do nothing crazy.
Yo, man,
they like
doing?
Cursed him out, maybe threw like liquor on his car and stuff like that. And I was like, they were like, "You want some of this too, old man?" Nope.
No.
And I started honking my horn. Lakers champions, let's go.
Oh, man, look at that, Kings fans. Kenny punked right there driving down Crenshaw Boulevard.
I had to do it. None of y'all were going to pay for my car to get unbattered the way it was about to.
Kenny's like, yeah, my man, let's do it.
Damian Barlow. Kenny Carraway. Four topics, few arguments, no winners. One-on-one with D'Lo and KC.
I can't believe that's the first time you've heard the Stan Van story.
That's crazy.
That
the
absolutely...
Kinko's into Thomas and got out of there. So was he going to take the Kings job?
He was. Yes, he was. If memory serves me correctly, and you tweet this at me if I'm wrong, I think he was out here searching, like he was looking at a house, like he was touring wow. Sacramento. Like he was the coach. He was going to be the coach.
Wow.
He was the guy. It was like the big final interview. Everybody knew he was here. Like we all knew that he was here. Everybody knew that he was here. And Billy Donovan backs out of the Orlando job. And it all happened really, really quickly.
Man.
And all of
he
a sudden.
He made the right decision, though.
Stan Van Gundy. Yeah,
they went to the finals. What in his probably like his second or third year or something like that?
Yeah, I mean Dwight
Maybe
was
second year.
And Dwight was really. Don't ever forget if you've learned one thing today, don't ever forget how dominant Dwight Howard was when he was in Orlando.
Hall of Famer Dwight Howard.
Like
he's going to the Hall of Fame.
Oh, hands down, he's going to the Hall.
People look at him as a joke, but he's going to the Hall of Fame.
He was freakishly dominant. In Orlando.
I know we got one-on-ones to get to, and we're going to get to them, but me saying Dwight Howard is a Hall of Famer, I wanted to ask you this. Maybe we get in-depth next week or something like that. Let me ask you a quick question. Is Stephon Marbury a Hall of Famer?
I don't think so. I mean, I'd have to look into it. I don't
Kevin Durant
think so.
Referred to him as a Hall of Famer. That's how it came up. And I was like, I had to take a pause because I was like, that's crazy. But then I thought about it, and once again, when you talk about basketball Hall of Fame, you talk about basketball
sure.
Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And I know they don't do the prep thing, but he's one of the most heralded prep players in the history of America, to be honest with you. And they got a movie that's loosely based on him. He did pretty good in the NBA. He was a multi-time All-Star in the NBA. Then he goes to China, and he's a guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's worth a discussion. We can discuss it another time, but that... That made
too
me
late.
Pause
I'm looking
bit.
At the numbers. I'm looking at these are NBA only numbers. I don't have his numbers in China. I don't know that they factor those in. Do they factor that in? Like I don't know that they do. I know it's basketball.
I think
I don't know. Like, Vlade's international career is factored in.
But they do it with FIBA more than Yugoslavian League. I shouldn't say that. That was the wrong one. But whatever Euro League he's in, they don't factor that in. But
it's a career 19.3 points per game.
Wow.
7.6 assists.
That's not bad at all. 20-7?
Peaked at 23.9 points per game.
Oh, man. Wow. I didn't know his numbers were that good. 19-7 is pretty damn good for your
career.
Really
good in Minnesota, if you remember those years in Minnesota. Like this is interesting.
He took teams to the playoffs. He took New Jersey to the playoffs. He took Phoenix to the playoffs.
Averaged 29.5 points in Beijing.
Man,
in 2012-13, like I don't know, I don't think so. But
and then you talk about cultural influence. I mean, all basketball fans love Slam magazine. Slam was basically invented because of Stephon Marbury, and he was, or at the very least, he was the guy. They put a lot on that relationship because there's a cool podcast interview with Kevin Durant and our man Bansky, Eddie Gonzalez, who they talked to. Scoop Jackson and Russ Bergston, and they talk about that. There's like that was the foundation of what we were trying to do, Stephon Marbury. And you talk about the influence that magazine has had on the basketball culture. It made me think. I don't know how I feel yet, but it made me think, like, is Stephon Marbury a Hall of Famer?
Is he the second most culturally influential player in league history?
No, I think AI's ahead of him.
That's right. That's why he's second.
I go Mike in AI.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what was the conversation we had off air about old shoes that we continue to buy?
Yeah.
It's Mike first.
Yeah, it's really close, though.
It is, though. No, I see you. I mean, see you.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't factor Mike into the conversation, so
Stephon, but Stephon's dead, like, that when you go through his numbers and you talk about his career, like, he's up there. I don't know. Well, we're going to save that we're going to have a whole segment.
Too late. We just dove into it for like 5 minutes. believe it or not, Mike is going to come back up here in 2020 in this one-on-one conversation. But as we roll along here, can I come play with y'all? That was a question Victor Oladipo allegedly asked opponents during games this past stretch bubble. Vic. Can I come play with y'all? Fair or foul from Victor Oladipo?
It's a technical. What are you doing? And I love me some Victor Oladipo. Once again, I love the man can sing, too. I thought he was going to be played at my wedding. The man can sing. I love that, and he's a hell of a basketball player. But you can't go around asking people in the middle of the game, can I come play with y'all? That goes against everything I believe in. You know that, Damon. I'm too much of a competitor to ever say that.
Yeah, I believe you. Two quick things. You said Victor Oladipo is going to be played at your wedding?
Oh, his song was going to be played for sure. Oh. If I could get him to sing there, that would be even better. But his song, what's the name of his song? Connected. Oh, I love Connected. It's a great song. You got to listen to it.
Okay.
It's a great song.
Okay. I don't have Victor Oladipo on any of my playlists. Two, would it change your mind if one of those teams that he was talking to last season, that he said, hey, can I come play with y'all, was the New York Knicks? Because allegedly one of the teams he said that to was the New York Knicks, because the joke was, how desperate do you have to be to ask the New York Knicks if you can come play with them?
Big time Knicks supporter here. You guys know that. But that would be ridiculous for him to ask, can I come play with y'all? Well, why would you be asking anybody on the Knicks, can I come play with y'all? You got to stop this, Vic. I'd love to see him in the Garden, though.
I'm sure you would. You'd love to see anything relevant in the Garden. It's been so long. I get it. What do you got?
They don't even do WWE in the Garden no more. Which reminded me.
Because it's really expensive.
That's what I've always heard.
It's really expensive.
I hope I don't create another rabbit hole because we got one-on-one to do. But what are they going to do with the Thunderdome now?
The WWE Thunderdome? I don't know.
The Magic are taking it back over. Where are they going to go?
Maybe they
go to the Amway Center.
Well, they go to wait, isn't that where the Thunderdome is, the Amway Center?
No, they're in the current Magic place. The Amway, well, I think the old O-Rena or whatever it was. I thought that was called the Amway Center.
Oh.
The old one.
Oh, okay.
But maybe this one is too. I don't know.
No.
But maybe that's where they go.
I don't care what WWE does with the Thunderdome. They're a mess. It doesn't. I don't know what they're going to do with it.
I've been thinking about that for
the
last
day. I admire their creativity, though, for putting a bunch of computer screens around and calling it an audience. Like, I admire them for that. You got to do something.
Maybe D'Lo and Casey can be in the audience one day.
How do we sign up for that? Through a WWE show.
I wouldn't be in the picture the whole time.
That's a hard pass.
Just have me there.
I'll put my dogs there, and they can sit there and watch, because there's no way I'm sitting through a WWE show anymore.
to once again, to reiterate your question, though, it was a technical foul for Victor Oladipo to ask that in the middle of the
game. I just thought it was funny.
It was funny.
Like, that's how bad. Ridiculous like, I didn't know it was that bad in Indiana that you started asking opponents to come play with them. I had no idea it was like that. And he'll be another name to watch. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He'll be another name to watch in the coming days.
I would take a chance on him, too. You already know that. We talked about that in the past. I'd take a chance on Vic.
Okay.
I'd take a chance.
What do you got for me?
So, when you talk about top point guards in the game, when you talk about Michael Jordan like you just did, there are some people out there that believe that the Detroit Pistons really just dominated or got dominated by Mike, got embarrassed. Isaiah Thomas doesn't feel that way. Isaiah Thomas says that he dominated Michael Jordan in his time with the Detroit Pistons. And you know what? He's got a case, and I know you got the numbers to lay that out. But I got to ask you, fair or foul? Isaiah Thomas saying he dominated Michael Jordan and the Bulls.
Well, it's foul, but, you know, we have the full clip here of Shannon Sharpe and Isaiah Thomas. Let's see if we can provide, like, a little bit of context here to what Isaiah was saying. He was being asked about, like, his toughest opponents.
You know, just head-to-head, you know, I was dominant over him.
Right.
When all teams met, you know, when you go back and you look at until 91, when I basically had career-ending wrist surgery.
Right.
Up until then, you know, my record against him and his team, you know, it really wasn't competition. Okay.
All right. This is the feud that's never going to end. And I get Isaiah had to have his little moment after the Last Dance, but here are the actual numbers. They played in the regular season 43 times. The Pistons won 24 of those 43 games. We did the math for you. That means the Bulls won 19. Those were regular season games only. Isaiah 21-4-9. Jordan, who Isaiah dominated, 31.6-6-5. In the 22 playoff games that they played in, the Pistons won 12. Again, we did the math for you. That means the Bulls won 10. Isaiah, 19-4-8. Jordan, who Isaiah dominated, 37-6. His career-ending wrist surgery that he refers to wasn't quite career-ending in 1991 because the Pistons made the playoff once in Isaiah's last three seasons after they walked off the floor versus Chicago. Now, through the majority of Isaiah Thomas's career, it was Larry Bird. I'm not buying Dr. J. Like, I don't believe that because Dr. J wasn't around in the, well, dominant in the late 80s. I'm not buying that line whatsoever. Magic, you faced him a couple of times in the finals. Like, all right, fine.
Sounds like you're dismissing Isaiah right now.
Yes, I am dismissing Isaiah.
Isaiah has a hell of a point.
Explain to me how the word dominant works in this conversation.
They beat him over and over again. Now, dominant may be a stretch, right? Because I think they went to 7 on two different occasions and 6 on another occasion.
What ultimately matters is they beat them in the playoff series more times than the Bulls beat them.
Yeah, so dominant is a little stretch.
They didn't get back. Like, that's not Jordan's fault. Like, that's not the Bulls' fault. They never got back to the playoffs to a playoff matchup after the Bulls dismissed them in rather humiliating fashion in 1991.
Yeah. Absolutely, but that's not Isaiah's time. Isaiah was mid to late 80s. That's not his time. The 90s, that was Jordan's time. And I think Isaiah would even say that. The Bad Boys Pistons and Isaiah, his time was done at that point. So Jordan doing what he did then, that's something totally different. What he's talking about is when we were at our prime, and Jordan's Bulls teams weren't at their prime. Jordan himself wasn't at his prime, although in 87 he averaged 37 a game. But you can make the argument the Bulls team wasn't at their prime. But when the Pistons were doing what they did, they weren't concerned about Jordan and the Bulls. I think he's right.
No, they created an entire form of defense.
They were the little brother.
Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
The Bulls
Jordan.
Were the little brother. They were like, we'll beat them. We'll beat them. We'll beat them. We got to get past Magic.
Okay. Can you help a brother out? Was there a Magic rules that has been talked about all of these years? Was there a Bird rules? I know there's a Bird rule, but were there the Larry Bird rules?
No,
was that a thing?
When you talk about rules like that, I think you look at it.
I know that.
I think you look at it because you respect what he can do, but we got the blueprint to beat him. This is how you beat
him. Because you created.
Yeah.
The guy who you
claim. Yeah, we created. This is how you beat him. He can't get past this. That's what that was for Detroit. I was like, we've got the blueprint. We know how to beat you. We're going to execute it. And you can't beat us.
Doesn't the fact that you had to create a blueprint for one player show that, yeah, maybe this guy is a factor. Maybe he's a focus. He's saying right here, the quote is, my focus was Bird, Magic, Dr. J, Kareem. No, it wasn't. That's absurd. It was not. It was Michael Jeffrey Jordan.
I know what he's saying. He's saying he already had that figured out. He had to try to figure out Bird and Magic. He hadn't figured them out. He figured out Mike.
31 Bulls, points per game in their 43 matchups.
He figured out Mike and the Bulls.
He figured them out. 31.6 points per game in their matchups.
You know who you're talking to. You know Mike is my guy. I love Isaiah Thomas too, though. But you know Mike is my guy. It's no disrespect. But I understand where Isaiah's coming. When Isaiah was there, when Isaiah was at the top, who were the top three teams in the league? 87, 88, 89.
Probably Lakers, Celtics, Pistons.
It wasn't the Bulls. The Bulls maybe had the most. They all saw him coming. They know what was going to come. So they was like, let's get these in before he figures it out. But they weren't the championship team.
Okay.
I hear what Isaiah's saying. That's all I'm saying. I hear what he's saying.
I hear what I'm saying, too. 31 points per game. I don't know.
0-3. 0-3 in the playoffs.
Hey, Jordan won championships. Like, think about this for a second. They created – you're just dismissing my Jordan rules argument, which I think is a fantastic argument.
No,
you're just dismissing
argument.
It. But you're dismissing it, and that's bothering me because I think it's a really strong argument. Jordan won titles and never stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Isaiah, the Pistons, they just fold. Once the Bulls beat him, the Pistons just folded up and died.
Well, that's because Isaiah Thomas isn't Michael Jordan. Like, don't get it twisted. I'm not making that argument. He's not Michael Jordan. I'm just saying when he was doing his thing, Mike, I agree with him that Mike wasn't the concern. They had him figured out. They had the Bulls figured out, at least. Okay. They had the Bulls figured out. And in fairness to him, he didn't say he dominated Michael Jordan individually. He dominated that team.
I feel like that's exactly what he said. Do I need to? I closed the screen. I was ready to move on to this Kyler Marbury.
God bless it. Let's go.
For goodness sakes, man. This Kyler Murray stat. I get paid to talk, ladies and gentlemen. My sincerest apologies for being bad at it.
I think he was referring to he dominated Jordan and his team, not Jordan. Not Jordan specifically.
You know, just head to head, you know, I was dominant over him.
Right. You
know, it's head to head as a team.
When all teams met.
Thank you.
You know, when you go back and you look at until 91, when I basically had career ending wrist surgery.
Right.
Up until then.
Yeah, he's going to start chuckling. I don't even care what he says
hilarious.
After this. I can't even.
Against him and his team, you know, it really was a competition there.
He knows he's full of crap. That's why he's lying. You ever tell a lie and you start laughing? That's what he's doing. He knows he's full of crap. That's why he started chuckling. That is absolutely why he started laughing.
That was the best part.
He's like, I'm about to say something. I'm full of crap, and Shannon ain't gonna call me on it. And I'm just gonna
this
sit
is an
here
evergreen
and,
topic though. We can bring this giggle back anytime and do maybe an hour.
Kyler Murray has 2,130 passing yards right now and 543 rushing yards. That's impressive. Of course it is. Kyler Murray has had an impressive season this year. What I didn't realize is that Kyler Murray is on the verge of becoming the very first quarterback in NFL history to throw for 4,000 yards or more and rush for 1,000 yards or more in the same season. It's never happened before. Lamar Jackson, last year, he gained over 1,000 yards, but he only threw only for 3,127. Cam Newton, he threw for 4,000 yards in 2011, but he only, again, only rushed for 706 yards. Kyler Murray is on the verge of making history this season.
Shout out to Kyler Murray, man. What a season. What a season. In his sophomore season, it's only second year in the league. And what him and Cliff Kingsbury are putting together right now, no shade, no shade. I know I've, you know, dismissed the Cardinals a lot this year, but what Kyler Murray's doing is phenomenal right now.
He really is.
He's looking really, really elite, man. Big
and
ups
to really, him. It's really funny how we look at MVPs. Because I just gave you the numbers. He's having statistically a, I don't want to go so far as to say significantly better, but a better season than Lamar Jackson had last year. And there was a point last year where there wasn't a question who the MVP was. And I think Kyler's in the conversation, in it.
Yeah.
They beat the Bills this week. They beat the Bills this week. He's going to shoot up near the top of that conversation. Whether he is at the top will probably have a lot to do with what the Seahawks do against the Rams and what Patrick Mahomes continues to do, because there is no rule that you can only win one NBA championship. What's or one NFL MVP.
We'll save mine for tomorrow, because I think it's worth a discussion. Yeah, it's worth a discussion. You guys don't want to miss it. And we'll have Marshall here. Yeah, you don't want to miss it.
Also, I have Damon Bruce. He'll be with us at 1 o'clock tomorrow. It'll be a 49er Friday. We appreciate you. And who knows what more NBA rumors are going to pop up in the next 24 hours or so. We appreciate you so much for being with us. If you missed our conversation with Mike Triplett, if you missed any of our conversations today, you can download the Radio.com app in the App Store. Use the blue rewind button at the bottom. It's blue on your iPad. It is blue on your iPhone. It is blue on whatever app you're using. If you're using from the desktop, you'll see the screen at the bottom where you just scroll back to 12 o'clock and you can take a listen. Never miss a single moment of D'Lo and KC. Radio.com is also the exclusive home of the D'Lo and KC podcast. We'll be back here tomorrow at 12. Damian Ratto and Kolsky are coming up next here on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
I see you, Zeke.